This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan.
Oh, yes. Welcome to beautiful, sunny Florida. And welcome to another live edition of Rico Bronya. Now, we are lucky enough to be broadcasting from the absolutely gorgeous PGA National Resort in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And here's, I guess, the best review I can give for PGA National. For those that know me, I don't golf, not a golfer, right? And I'm sure the golfers love this place, but I'm not a golfer. And yet this place is freaking awesome. It's beautiful. They've got gorgeous pool. They've got gorgeous restaurants. It is clearly too classy for me. This is the absolute truth. But we do appreciate PGA National hosting Rico Bronya and hosting us. It's a beautiful resort. So if you are in the Palm Beach Gardens, Florida area, I do advise come on down. I think the Yankees even stayed here too, because the Yankees had an East Coast Florida spring training trip in which they were playing in West Palm Beach and they were playing in Jupiter on Saturday and Sunday. And they chose PGA National because it's that good. So I do want to thank PGA National for hosting us. Now, we got a lot to talk about. Obviously, the Francisco Alvarez injury is the headline. We will break that down, including how we found out about it, which was rather interesting. And being at spring training today, being in Port St. Lucie, Florida, had a chance to talk to the great Mark Vientos, had a chance to talk to Pete Alonso, had a chance to talk to quite a few guys. So here's some of those interviews today here on Rico Bronya. One reminder before we get started, your last chance to get half off the brand new The Rico t-shirt, The Rico Established 2022. All you got to do is fill out that survey, which you can see on the YouTube channel or wherever you download The Rico Bronya. You fill it out, boom, half off the beautiful Rico t-shirt. Now, let's get to Alvarez. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. This sucks. Plain and simple. And the other thing I'm not going to sugarcoat is I love Francisco Alvarez. I still have very high hopes for Francisco Alvarez, but he is now creating a resume of being injury prone. That's just the reality. I mean, I'd love to say that's not the case, but it is. We saw his injury last year that wiped out a few months earlier this season and really kind of hurt the Mets' momentum that they had early in the year. And this year, you think, all right, this is going to be a big year for Alvarez. The lineup is deeper. He's made some mechanical changes during the offseason. This is it. This is going to be the breakthrough year for Francisco. He even talks about how good he thinks the lineup is going to be, how it's the best lineup in baseball. And we hear he's got a fractured, what's it called again? Hold on, I wrote it down. Hamate bone, yes. A fractured hamate bone in his left hand. And he got it by swinging the bat during live batting practice. And I asked Carlos Mendoza about this. I said, is this normal? Because it doesn't feel normal. Is this related to last year's injury? He said it's not. He said it is normal. And that's fine. But as a Met fan, I'm concerned about Francisco Alvarez. Forget about the team for a second. We'll get to the team and how this injury impacts their lineup and who they may have to go out and get to replace him. But I'm concerned about him because this is another full year for Francisco Alvarez. I mean, you think about his timetable here at the major league level. He got called up very late in 22. We saw him in 23 where he was wildly inconsistent. But you saw positives from him to the point where I think most of us are like, lock the guy up long term. And then last year was also kind of that inconsistencies, but you saw the injury early in the season, which negatively affected this team. And now we've got another one. And if you listen to the timetable that Mendy laid out of 6 to 8 weeks, so right now it's March 9th, March 10th, depending on when you've downloaded and listened to the Rico. 6 to 8 weeks, I'm going to be a little conservative and say it's probably the 2 full months. And so you're looking at the middle of May. And then I wonder, okay, he comes back in the middle of May. How much does this injury affect him? Is this going to cause him to get off to a bad start? Is this going to cause him to not gain the experience of working with some of the new arms in this rotation, like a guy such as Clay Holmes? So it stinks. It just does. Look, it's a part of baseball, because Mendy said that to us a few times, not just when he met the media, but we talked to him off mic right after. And he said numerous times, especially to Hoff, because Hoff looked like he was going to cry. I thought Pete was going to break down in front of Mendy after this Alvarez news. And Mendy was like, it's part of baseball, man. It's part of baseball. Look, the Yankees are dealing with Gerrit Cole and Giancarlo Stanton's elbows are falling off. It's a part of baseball. It is what it is. And it is a part of baseball. I get it. Like, the Braves are dealing with injury issues, especially a catcher with the Sean Murphy injury. It just stinks. And I think what adds to the frustration of it is that this is an ascending young player, and we still don't know what he is or who he is. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't – I'm not saying it'd be easier if it was Lindor or Soto, but we know what those guys are, right? There is still a major question on who Francisco Alvarez is. So the injury stinks. We found out about the injury in a very odd way. So we came down to spring training on Saturday. For those that checked out, we did a live Rico from Jupiter, Florida at the Das Beer Garden, and we appreciate them hosting us. So we did a podcast there. We went to the Met game that night. Juan Soto had 3 hits. It was fantastic. And then on Sunday, we went early to Port St. Lucie, Florida, get some interviews, talk to a few guys, and then we would watch the game. So Hoff and I want to paint this picture. Hoff and I are standing there in the Met dugout. Very few people around. Keith Radd, who joined us yesterday, was hanging out. Pat McCarthy, who does a great job on the Mets Odyssey Radio Network, is there. But very, very quiet, very, very calm. Talking to a guy with the Mets who said, yeah, we'll get you a few guys. Nice, easy Sunday. It's going to be a great day. All of a sudden, here comes Mendy. Mendy comes right by. Very nice. Says, hey, how's it going? I'll talk to you in a few minutes. Sits down, has a bat in his hand. And I'm like, wait a second. I don't like that look. I don't like I don't like that look on Mendy's face. And he sits down. SNY's got the camera there. And immediately he's like, I got some injury news. And as he says that, I think I slap Hoff in the arm. Like, what are we, what? And so I'm not going to lie to you. The guy I feared was Soto. I did. I don't know why that was the number one person that came into my head. Maybe it's because of the fact that I just saw him in Jupiter the night before. He had 3 hits. He was fantastic. I don't know. And then he says Francisco Alvarez. And as he says that, my stomach drops. And he describes that it's a broken left hamstring, it's 6 to 8 weeks, the whole thing. And so it was surreal kind of getting that news almost straight from Mendoza. He wasn't saying it necessarily to us. He was saying it to the media. And then, of course, it got, you know, tweeted out and the videos are out there. But it was quite an experience in Port St. Lucie, Florida. We thought it was going to be a nice, easy Sunday. We were going to chill. It was going to be relaxing. And then all of a sudden we get this news about Alvarez. So I've digested it for a few hours. I've thought about it. And look, Luis Torrens should just be the starting catcher. Let's start with the obvious. I think he earned that last season. His defense, let's not forget how good Luis Torrens was defensively last year. He was throwing out base runners, which, by the way, some guys on this staff can use the help. Hello, Edwin Diaz. When you've got a guy behind the plate that is so automatic at stopping a running game, and it matters more in this era, when obviously it's just a little bit easier to steal bases. So I'll start with that. I would actually argue right off the top, the Mets get a slight defensive upgrade, maybe more than slight. I'm probably being too kind. They get a major defensive upgrade with Luis Torrens. That's number one. Number two, is he going to hit? I have no idea, because his bat definitely cooled off after he had that hot stretch when the Mets first acquired him. But there's nobody out there. There's nobody in this system that should start over Luis Torrens. So when we talk, and we will in about a second, about all the backup catcher options, let's keep it in mind. We're talking once a week. Luis Torrens for probably a month and a half, because I think that's what we're looking at, should just play every day. And our attitude should be, go play great defense, okay? Go shut down opposing running games. Go give us A-plus defense. Handle this pitching staff with care. And if you can hit, I mean, I don't want to set the bar too low, but I'm about to, you know, 230 with a, you know, 690 OPS and a couple of home runs, maybe a couple of clutch hits like we saw last year, I think this lineup is equipped to deal with it. Now, I don't know how much production they're getting out of center field. That's another position you kind of look at and say it's glove first. But I just don't think there's any crazy option that they should go after. I mean, any person they add to this team, to me, is a backup. So let's go through some names of the guys that are here. Jackson Reitz actually got the start. That should have been the warning sign. When Jackson Reitz was in the lineup, we were in Jupiter the day before, and Torrens was the catcher. So I'm like, well, why is Alvarez not playing? That should have been the sign. But Jackson Reitz is a guy with a little bit of major league experience. He played for San Francisco briefly. His numbers at the minor leagues are nothing to go nuts about. But again, we're talking about a backup. We're talking about a guy who's going to catch once or twice a week. But how about the fact, for those that didn't consume Sunday's Mets game, and we did until we tapped out and left early, which I admit we did. I'm not a leave early guy, but I don't know, man. The sun beat me up. But Jackson Reitz hits a grand slam. And I'm looking around seeing, there you go, there's our backup catcher. I kid. It was a nice little moment for him. And he's a candidate, by the way, because he does have that major league experience. But no, I don't think necessarily his grand slam in the first inning of a spring training game against the Nationals is going to get him that job. But he's literally a candidate. Hayden Singer is another guy. Absolutely a candidate. Chris Williams, another guy. I mean, these are not amazing names, but these are the internal guys that they have. And if I had to guess right now, I'd probably say Reitz would have the slight edge at that backup catcher spot. I think Senger is probably more of a plus defensively. So those are your internal options. And then you've got external options. And it's funny, we ran into David Stearns right after this injury happened. And after I gave him some crap, asking him if he read my book or not, which he did not, and that's okay, I said to him, so what backup catcher are we going to add? And he wouldn't give me an answer, but there are some interesting names out there. So let's get it out of the way now. Let me just bring up a name. It's going to cause a lot of people to be pissed off that I'm saying his name, but he is out there, and that, of course, is James McCann. James McCann is out there. And before anyone gets so pissed off about it, can I explain why that's not a bad option? I mean, it should be obvious why it's not a bad option. Number one, the reason we resented James McCann is because how much he was making and because they didn't sign JT Realmuto, who is clearly better, right? That's our resentment towards McCann and the fact that the Mets had to pay him to go away, which is never a good sign when you actually write checks for guys years after they're not with the team. If you bring him in now, and he is a free agent, there are three kind of veterans that I would look at and say, hey, these are proven major leaguers back into their careers, but sure, you can bring him in as a backup. James McCann is being brought in, or would be brought in a very different role. You know, we're not expecting him to be the guy who's the everyday catcher who's, you know, being compared to JT Realmuto because that's the guy we preferred. We're also not paying him a lot of money. So I don't think it's the worst idea in the world. Now, last year with the Orioles, 65 games, 234 average, 666 OPS, 8 home runs. So a little bit of pop, didn't hit much. I mean, that's basically the numbers he's put up over the last couple of years. Remember, he went to Baltimore after we got rid of him. We're not getting much better out of a backup catcher than that. So really it comes down to how much defense can he supply? How much veteran leadership can he supply with some of the young pitchers that may eventually come up? I just don't think he's a terrible option. And I think what we need to do is forget about 2022 and forget about 2021 and forget about, you know, how much money he was making and just say, hey, is that a better option than Hayden Senger? Now, he may not be, to be quite frank, especially if Senger's that much of a plus defensively, but he is an option. Yasmani Grandal is another guy. He's 36 years old. He's a free agent. He's been an all-star a couple of times. His numbers last year, he was with the Pirates for half the season, and it's basically the same numbers as James McCann. You know, very down offensively, but pretty much the same thing. He had 228. He had a 704 OPS, and he had 9 home runs. And that's basically what Grandal's been. Now, what is he defensively? I don't know. I mean, we could look at defensive metrics and try to trust it. The other guy, to keep an eye on. And I think I brought this guy's name. Did I bring it up to Mendy? I think I did. A guy who's on another team, but he's a non-roster invitee. And so when you're a non-roster invitee, there's no guarantee you're going to make the team. In fact, the odds are you're not going to make the team. And the guy I'm referring to is once a Met, always a Met, Tomas Nido. And to be fair about Tomas Nido, last year when Alvarez was hurt, he didn't do the worst job ever behind the plate. So maybe not seeing him for a while has caused me to say, hey, why not? And I always thought he was overrated defensively, in fairness. So I'm not going to put him over defensively. I always thought he was a little bit better or a little bit worse than everybody described. But Tomas Nido is a non-roster invitee of the Detroit Tigers. And why not? He's got the perk of Nido, and it's the same perk of the guys that are already here, much more Senger than Reitz and Williams because they're new to the organization. It's familiarity. I'm close. Familiarity. It's been a long weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Familiarity with some of the arms that they're going to catch. And so that is something that Tomas Nido slightly has, you know? So it stinks. It stinks that these are the names we're talking about, but injuries are a part of spring training. And being a great team, and hopefully the Mets will be a great team, they got a lot to prove, is you overcome this. But in terms of Alvarez specifically, I start to worry now that he has become an injury-prone player. Now, before we hear from Mark Vientos, Pete Hoffman had his chance. So we were hanging out with Mendy, Carlos Mendoza, and we're talking about some normal stuff, stuff that we've already talked about. Asked him some questions about Francisco Lindor playing every day, Nimmo. Asked him about Soto playing left field, by the way. Not even something they're going to consider. And so I think I did it. But I say to Mendy, hey, Mendy, remember when you hated my Alonso batting second idea? And he's like, yeah, of course. I said, Hoff wants to hit Brandon Nimmo ninth. So take the Rico audience through your exchange with the manager as you're trying to convince him of an idea that everybody hates, and that's Brandon Nimmo, when healthy, batting ninth.
Well, first of all, he did call me, oh, so you're old school baseball. That's the first thing he said. And then he kind of basically pulled my pants down and smacked my butt and basically called me a little kid that I had no idea what he was talking about. But in reality, no, we had a decent conversation. And he said, why would you want to do that? I go, because I want to reset the lineup. And I'd like to have someone who can get on base bat ninth. And he looked at me like with five heads and said, so you want someone who gets on base to bat last. And that was the beginning of him basically undressing every answer I had in every which way possible. He's like, so, okay, so who's batting first? Who's batting second? And we found that then we finally got to who's going to bat fifth or sixth. And then we realized Alvarez was out. So it was like, okay, we're going to get back to reality. Nimmo's going to be five or six.
He tapped out, basically.
I was done.
Hoff was like, and by the way, I love when a manager does that. Boone will do that sometimes where when they disagree with you, instead of just saying no, they'll throw back at you, okay, well, who's batting seventh? Who's batting sixth? And when you do think of the lineup with Brandon Nimmo batting ninth and now Alvarez out, you realize that you've just left your lineup pretty naked. It turns out to be a bad idea.
No, and plus the fact that I'm sitting there telling Carlos Mendoza, have you looked at the platoon at DH between Marte and Winker, how good their numbers are, their splits are? I'm like convincing him, like, of course he knows the freaking numbers. But listen, I tried. I tried for anybody that did care.
No, and that's all you can do.
That's it.
I mean, it's like me with Pete Alonso batting second,
yes,
which he just shut down and said, no, I haven't even considered it. And by the way, we talked about this a little bit yesterday on the Rico that it's basically been confirmed that he's going to go Lindor one, Soto two, Pete three, and then depending on the matchup, Vientos or Nimmo four. I will say this about Nimmo, and I am choosing as of this moment, until proven otherwise with this administration, to trust them. When they talk about injuries, they put a timetable out. I'm going to trust them because they have not, you know, broken our trust yet. This isn't Brody Van Wagenen. They do not seem concerned at all about Brandon Nimmo. And I brought that up to Carlos, and he's going to be fine. So we'll see. I mean, time will tell if he's fine. But the one thing about Nimmo, and Mendy pretty much said this is going to be the case, is what I have surmised, which is you just can't expect him 7 days a week. Now, Nimmo wants to play every day, and he wants to post, as the term is, but he does seem to be on the same page with me that he just can't play every day. We want to keep him healthy. I mean, Brandon Nimmo is an incredibly important part of this lineup, an important part of this team, and obviously when he's not playing, and let's say it's McNeil in left, Beatty at second, assuming Beatty makes the team, which certainly nobody's confirmed yet. It changes the lineup a little bit, and I think that's when Vientos is clearly the cleanup hitter. And speaking of Mark Vientos, on Sunday in Port St. Lucie, Florida, in the first inning, we witnessed Mark Vientos hitting a bomb of a home run. And it was majestic. Seeing the ball explode off of Vientos' bat is special. And before the game, we had a chance to chat with Mark Vientos. So, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Vientos on Rico Bro.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Mark Vientos, how are you, sir?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm all right. So last year, they signed J.D. Martinez. They send you down. I was pissed off. I was like, Vientos has to be up here. We need to see if this guy can hit. What was your reaction to it, and how did it affect you beginning the year starting in AAA?
At first, I was upset, of course, because I wanted to break with the team. But I kind of got over it quick, kind of just like, thought like the far-sighted perspective on things and just like the long-term goals and what I wanted. So I just focus on what I can control in Syracuse and just get better.
So now here's step two. You come up, you had a game-winning home run against the Cardinals. I even created a fake AI song saying you can't send Vientos to the minors. They didn't listen to me. They send you down. So I'm angry. What's your reaction? Because you can only control what you control, like you said. You controlled it, and now you're back down in the minor leagues.
No, at that point, I knew my thing was just like kind of knowing that I could play in the big leagues. And I, right there when I did that, I had those 2-3 at-bats, and I did my thing. I was like, I feel good, man. I feel comfortable. Now it's just like when I get called back up, I have the opportunity, I'm just going to run with it.
When was the moment where you felt, all right, I've arrived as a major leaguer? Because obviously you put together a great year, but was there a specific moment where you knew who you were?
Yeah, after that walk-off, the first one, I kind of felt it. I was like, yeah, I can do this. I can do this pretty good.
All right, now you had a bunch of amazing home runs. You had a game winner against Cincy, which was badass, the grand slam against the Dodgers. I know it's a loss, but my personal favorite was in Philadelphia. Uh-huh. I think because I was there, yeah, and I had to deal with the obnoxious Philly fans. What's going through your mind when you come up in the ninth inning in a spot like that in the playoffs?
Man, I say it all the time, playing in Philly in the playoffs is, I don't think there's anything like it. It's just the energy's different. You all the fans are like standing up the whole game. And kind of when I hit that was like I lost my mind and I wanted to like yell at everybody in the stadium because they were all booing and like talking junk and whatnot. But like it was, that was a sick moment.
So was that your favorite moment of the season personally?
Dude, I don't know. I think my first walk-off was my favorite moment.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think my first walk-off was my favorite.
Your defense got, we could see this from the beginning, your defense got considerably better. What did you do that kind of led to that big jump in defensive ability?
Just repetition. Repetition, consistent work, learning from great guys like Lindor around me and the coaches that we got, Sarby, and kind of just like having the mindset of every single day doing early work, focus, trying to get better every single day, and then being aggressive when I was out there, not afraid to make any mistakes. I think that's the biggest thing, just being out there and being aggressive, like play offense with the baseball.
How was this offseason knowing that it was possible they were going to shift you towards first base? Like, how did you prepare for the year not being 100% sure what your position was going to be?
I started taking some reps at first base just in case, and because you know how this game is. You never know what can happen. So kind of, like, talked to Mandy and Stearns, and they say, hey, like, you should take some reps at first just in case what happens. And, yeah, I feel like I've also gotten reps in years past in the minor leagues at first, so I'm aware with the position.
Do you think you're going to play there a little bit this year on Pete Alonso off days or DH days?
I wouldn't doubt it, maybe.
Yeah. Batting spot. So you're going to be hitting, I think, fourth or fifth. That's the report that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you prefer to hit? Is there a spot that you feel most comfortable in?
Wherever they want me. Fourth and fifth, it's hard not to like that. You're talking about a team that is stacked, like, and I'm the youngest guy in that mix, and you're talking about a 1-5 that everybody is like all-star caliber player, and I'm in that mix. I'm just honored to be in a part of that 1-5.
What's it like being teammates with Juan Soto right now?
It's sick, man. It's sick. It's sick to be around a dude of his caliber, but we also have a bunch of guys that are all-star type players like him.
Are you sick of spring training yet?
Kinda. I want the season to start. I like the season games. I like the energy. I like the adrenaline. So,
what's that feeling going to be like when you're announced on the field opening day, Citi Field? The place is going to go nuts. Your name is announced, Mark Vientos, and the crowd goes nuts. What's it going to feel
you're
like?
Giving me goosebumps right now thinking about it, bro. It's going to be sick. It's going to be sick for sure.
Are you going to win the division this year?
That's what we're shooting for. So I would hope so. Yeah.
Shut those bastards in Philadelphia up, all right?
I like that.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
There he is, Mark Vientos, who I wanted to tell him for that home run he hit in Philadelphia. I was afraid for my life because I was in the building. And when he hit that game-time home run, which is still one of those underratedly awesome moments from the season because they lost the game. And I think that's why it's so underrated. But it was so ridiculously shocking when he hit that game-tying home run. But I felt like him because I couldn't react, surrounded by Philly fans at Citizens Bank Park. It was almost like a very quiet celebration that me and my family had. And, look, unfortunately, they lost the game. But that was one of those moments that tells you a lot about what that team was, but also what he is. I mean, Mark Vientos not only had, you know, we went through the story with him the beginning of his season last year where he doesn't make the team. Well, first, they had J.D. Martinez. And even when they did, I still wanted him to make the team because, to me, he was still going to get a chance to play until JD was ready. And that was one of the things we bitched about less than a year ago here on Rico Bronya. He doesn't have that happen. He gets sent down, so he gets hosed twice. First, they sign JD. Not that he got hosed, but they sign JD. They send him down anyway. He comes up. He hits a game-winning home run, one of his favorite moments, he said, gets sent down again, and then finally comes up and blossoms. So not only does he have that great year where he had – kind of the adversity early, but what a postseason. I mean, he was an incredible postseason player. So high hopes for Mark Vientos, and even, you know, the pressure builds when you lose guys in the lineup like Francisco Alvarez. So good to talk to Mark Vientos. He's a big hulking individual, that's for sure. I am a small man, and when I stand around Mark Vientos and Pete Alonso a little bit later on, I feel even smaller. I just feel very, very tiny. As far as spring training on Sunday, a couple of newsy things to get to. Number one, Edwin Diaz. So Edwin Diaz comes in
I think it was the fifth inning of the game on Sunday, his second performance of the spring. And I said to Pete, I said, look, I'm not going to freak out if he's bad, but it would be nice to see him bounce back because his first spring training outing was so bad. And Mendy downplayed it, no big deal, spring training. Diaz even said he was nervous. Diaz comes in, cannot throw a freaking strike. Basically reminds you of the beginning of his performance in game four against the Phillies. And the crowd, and this is a spring training crowd. Granted, it's packed, and I'm sure a few of them are New Yorkers, but you could hear the audible groan as Diaz is struggling to throw strikes. But what Diaz does a lot, he did it against the Phillies and the DS, and he does it on a meaningless Sunday afternoon in March in spring training, is he puts the first few guys on base, and he strikes out three in a row. So that was nice. That was encouraging. What I ask Edwin Diaz is, you're going to do that during the regular season, but could you mix in a couple of 1-2-3s? Just to, for our own sake, for our hearts, for our stomachs, because that is tough to watch. But he was able to do it. So spring training performance number two for Edwin Diaz was the complete roller coaster ride. Number two, I didn't get to see it, but it was on the backfields here in spring training. Kodai Senga threw 50 pitches. He threw a few innings. He did it against Mutz minor leaguers. I don't care about the results. I care. How's he feeling? Is he feeling good? He's feeling good today. Hopefully when he wakes up on Monday, we don't hear any issues, because right now your fingers have to be just crossed permanently until we get to opening day, where I presume Kodai Senga would get that nod, assuming he's healthy. So another performance by Kodai Senga, but he does it on the backfields here in St. Lucie. He didn't do it on the fields we were watching because we all got to bear witness to Clay Holmes. I will ask Clay this, though. Give up a run or two before the season starts. I don't want to see Clay Holmes going into the start of the season with a zero ERA. You know what I mean? Like, give up a couple, but he continues to be great. We've saw him throw his changeup, his new changeup. What does he have a nickname for it again? I forget. But that changeup that he's mixed in, he threw the cutter a few times. Obviously, the sinker continues to be effective. And we saw Clay Holmes pitch into the fourth inning. Again, only gives up one base hit. He's only given up two hits through spring training. Isn't that incredible? I think he's at 9 2/3 innings or 9 1/3 innings, zero runs, two hits. He had a ton of strikeouts, a bunch of swing and misses, including three of them on that kick changeup that Holmes has developed. So you can't ask. I'm not telling you he's going to win the Cy Young, though I did get a text message from one Tiki Barber who said, quote, Clay Holmes Cy Young. So I guess that's a prediction from Teak, or he likes the bet I suggested of, hey, let's bet Clay Holmes to win the Cy Young. Could win a lot of money off that, but he's had a great spring, an outstanding spring. What I don't want to do, though, is have it change our expectations. Like, I'm high on Clay. I think he can make that adjustment from relief pitcher to starting pitcher, but I don't want to get nuts about just spring training games. So I try to take a deep breath, but he looked great, and he's continued to look great. And we'll see if he could extend in his next start. He started to wear down a little bit in the fourth inning. He gave up that booming double. He also gave up a line drive that was caught by Jeff McNeil. But so far, it's all good with Clay Holmes. He has had an outstanding spring training. And let's see what he can do this year. We're going to do a season prediction, Rico. We always do. We do a little over-unders, make predictions on the season. I'd be curious to see what Met Nation, what the Met fan thinks about Clay Holmes, because that was a signing when they made it. And maybe it's because Yankee fans are our friends and they can be a little douchey. They can be a little annoying. So maybe they had something to do with it, but it was a very controversial signing in terms of Clay Holmes. What's he going to be as a starting pitcher? And the truth is, none of us know. Even through spring training, I can't tell you what he's going to be, but I am curious the confidence level of the Met fan going into the start of the year with Clay Holmes in the rotation. Now, another guy we had a chance to talk to in Port St. Lucie, Florida, and it's always cool to see him in uniform, because when you see this man in uniform, it does not matter how old he is. You say, boy, that guy can still play. And the guy we're able to see and talk to was the legendary Darryl Strawberry, who arrived at spring training, I think, yesterday. And today he was in uniform and he had conversations with Juan Soto. He talked to Pete Alonso. He was around basically supplying any help that anyone would want to know from a guy who has seen it all. So we had a chance to catch up with Darryl for a few minutes. And the first thing I needed to bring up to him, because
I still find this so weird. And I know Beningo finds this so weird. And any Met fan older than me that remembers the 80s finds this weird. And that's the fact that Daryl Strawberry lives in St. Louis. St. Louis, so the first thing we asked Daryl about is that. How the hell do you live in St. Louis?
Was at the beginning, but when your wife is from St. Louis, so you get a happy wife, you get a happy life. So that's what has kept me in St. Louis. And, of course, they always remind me about playing for the Mets, and we were a bunch of pond scums. And I hit a ball off the clock there, and we loved the fact that we had that chance to play against the Cardinals, and we had to go through them, you know, after that 85 season they beat us. We won 98 ball games, and they won, and we came back there next spring in 86, and we just knew from there we would never let the Cardinals beat us again.
You mentioned the home run off the clock. So we were making a list of, like, the greatest home runs in Met history, and you obviously had quite a few. For you, what is the home run you pick as the most favorite home run you hit as a Met?
I think in the playoffs against Nolan.
Yes.
Because Nolan and Doc was,
I was up there,
you know, pitching a great game.
Yep.
And there was no way we was going to beat Nolan the way he was pitching. Had I not tied that ball game up and kept that ball fair down the right field line and made it a 1-1 ball game, we go on to win that ball game. So if I don't hit that home run against him, that series is over.
Yeah.
And we had to beat one of the other guys because we was not going to beat Scott. And if anybody remember that series, we didn't have a chance against Mike Scott. So, you know, we had to beat him or Nepper, and we beat both of them.
Is it because Scott was scuffing the balls? Is that why you couldn't beat him?
He just had a season. That last part of the year, that year in 86, he was dominating throughout the course of that season. He had a run. You know, anytime a pitcher get on a run like that, it's going to be tough to beat. You know, in postseason when we got there, we realized that he was going to be tough to beat. I mean, he was all in our heads, you know, about was he cheating, was he cutting it, what was he doing. So whatever he was doing, he was very successful at it.
Yes. When Pete Alonso breaks your record, is there any part of you that's like, God damn it, I've had this for a long time, I wanted to keep it? Well, what's your feeling going to be like?
No, I'm not one of those players like that. You know, I love these guys, and these guys, David Wright, Pete, you know, these guys are homegrown players just like myself, and you got a chance to play with this franchise, and we got a chance to set the mark for this franchise. And, you know, I was one of those guys coming in the 80s, and David Wright, now Pete. Now, when he breaks it, I'm going to say congratulations, just like when David Wright took the RBI record. You know, it's a lot of work. It takes a lot to be able to do that, and these guys have done it. And they've played under this kind of pressure,
right,
you know, in the big city. And most people don't really realize that and understand how difficult that is to do. And they have done it. And I'm so happy that Pete has come back. And he can have the record. His record's been sitting there for, 35 years, you know. And it's his to take, you know. And I'm glad that he worked things out with the organization. And he can go forward from here and hopefully get to the next level. You know, next level for a guy like Pete is to win a championship now.
Yeah.
You've done everything else you need to do. You performed here. The fans love you. And when you do that in New York and you do that in Queens, it's very special.
Well, you obviously got a busy schedule. Will you travel when he's about to break the record so you can be there? How are you going to treat that?
No, I'm quite sure Ethan or Jay will call me. I'm not going to be traveling with him, but, you know, I'm excited for him like we all should be. You know, I think as a baseball player, when you're a former player, you don't try to hold on to records. You don't want to say, I don't want guys to break my records. Records are meant to be broken, and it's a part of it. And when you see guys that have come through the same system like you have, it's very special.
As one guy with a beautiful left-handed swing, what are your opinions on watching Juan Soto, especially now that he's a New York Met?
Very professional. The way he goes about batting practice, the way he's, you know, intentionally hit the ball the other way, make sure that, you know, he's covering the plate. That's important. That's why he's such a good hitter, because he's disciplined.
Right.
You know, and he takes a lot of walks. People say, well, he walks a lot. Well, yeah, guys behind me, drive him in, you know, because he's going to be on base. I mean, he's a very student of the game. And when he reminds me so much like Hernandez. You know, Hernandez was the best at, you know, what it takes to be in clutch situations and get big hits. You know why? Because he worked on it in batting practice. And I think that's the same thing you see Soto doing. You know, he's working on things, and people think, well, it's all about hitting the ball, ballpark. He's going to hit his own run.
Yeah.
But he's thinking about using the whole field. And that's that's what really takes you to the next level, and I think that's what he's looking to do.
I think he'll be fine because he was with the Yankees last year on a contract year, but what advice do you give to him and others when coming to New York and dealing with the pressure, in his case, the pressure of a historic contract?
Man, have fun. You know, baseball's a simple game. Don't complicate it. We've been playing this game a long time, and I think too many players get in their own head and get in their own way. Stay who you are. Stay true to what you are, and that's how you climb the ladder and continue to be successful. You think about it. He's 26 years old. Okay, he hasn't reached that next level yet. He's going to reach that next level when he hits 28, 29.
Right.
You know, and you know, he's still maturing as a player, and he's been in the big leagues a long time. So he's in the right place now. You know, he took a 15-year contract to come over here and play in Queens, and it's great. It's great to see for the New York Mets to have, you know, players like him and Lindor, guys that are really, truly stars of the game.
Yeah.
You know, both of them are stars of the game, and also Pete, too. The stars of the game, you got three. You know, I remember when it was me, Carter, and Hernandez. You had the big three in the lineup. They got the big three in the lineup, and now all they have to do is deliver.
Could you hit one out right now if someone lobbed one into you?
I probably could, but I don't know who's going to run for me.
That's the hard part.
That's a whole different ball game.
Yes.
Thank you, Darryl. I appreciate it, man.
Good to see you.
The great Darryl Strawberry. And I'll tell you, I think he would be able to put one out, especially if I was lobbing it into him. You know, if I was throwing the famous Twitter baseball 47-mile-per-hour changeup, I think he'd be able to put one out. I remember years ago, I was in Baltimore. The Orioles were playing the Phillies, and they did a home run derby of legends, okay? Old Orioles and old Phillies. Darren Dalton, years after he retired. Eddie Murray, years after he retired. Rick Dempsey. Had a bunch of guys, and they had a home run derby. And I was so excited. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, these are guys I grew up watching, and now they're having a home run derby. It was freaking horrendous. Nobody could get the ball even close. In fact, the only guy to hit a home run during that home run derby was Rick Dempsey because he was an active coach. So he was in shape. So, yeah, maybe that's not a home run derby we would want to see. But he talks about Juan Soto and having that approach like Keith Hernandez. Keith Hernandez with even more power. That's it's going to be exciting to watch because in batting practice, you know, it was may have been a few minutes after we talked to Darryl or before. I'm trying to remember. Soto took batting practice. He didn't play Sunday's game because he played Saturday's game. And the first 10 balls, he just ripped over third. So you talk about working on things. Basically, his focus was, I'm just going to hit line drives the other way right over third base. And he did it just about every time up. I do want to check a few of your emails. We always appreciate the interaction. The RicoB@gmail.com. Danny writes in about Edwin Diaz. One thing I haven't heard about all spring, and it would be a major point of emphasis, is Edwin Diaz doing a better job of holding runners on. It was a major issue last year. Anyone and everyone was stealing second and oftentimes third base off of Diaz. Have you heard anything? Is it too late to ask while you're down there? What's going on with Edwin Diaz holding guys on? He has been working on it, but so far in spring training, we haven't seen it really put to test. Like, he walked a few guys in Sunday's game. Nobody ran on him, so I guess that's a positive. But that's one area where Torrens catching is going to help him. Because remember how good Torrens was at shutting down an opposing run game. Obviously, a lot of it has to do with the pitching, and Edwin did a terrible job with guys running all over him. But certainly having a catcher behind the plate like Torrens can certainly help in that regard. Ron Shea writes, obviously, this is a terrible start on Sunday. I've sent an email before, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts with Alvarez out on Kevin Parada. He was such a highly talented prospect a few years ago, and now you never hear his name anymore. I know his numbers have been pedestrian in the minor leagues, but why not give him a chance on the spring training squad to see what he can do? We have nothing to lose, and maybe he's one of those guys that shines at the major league level, like Acuna. Am I off base? You're not off base to say, hey, what's going on with Kevin Parada? I mean, this was a guy who was a highly regarded prospect. He was a first-round pick just a couple of years ago from Georgia Tech. He put up these massive numbers in college. I remember when they drafted him, and you're looking at like 380 and 26 home runs and 70 games. I mean, just ridiculous offensive numbers. For whatever reason, I can't explain it. He just hasn't hit. He hasn't hit at the minors. I know that Acuna has given us that weird phenomenon where he didn't hit at AAA and he gets called up in a pinch and he produces. I don't know if I would rely on that with Kevin Parada, because remember, Kevin Parada hasn't hit double A pitching. Last year, in 115 games in Binghamton, he hit .214 with a .663 OPS. So it just hasn't been there offensively. And even, you know, he played in the Arizona Fall League the year before. He didn't hit there either. And then you look at his production down in Brooklyn in 2023, it was decent, but in Double A it was awful. So far, he just hasn't been able to conquer Double A pitching. If his defense was a plus, like if his defense was incredible, then I think you can make a better case to say, ah, screw it, just call him up because it's all about defense, which should be your priority when David Stearns and the Mets are looking at backup catchers. But I don't think that's the case with Kevin Parada. I don't think that's his game. I don't think that's an advantage. So I don't think he's going to be a part of this mix. Dan writes, the baseball gods are always listening. Nothing good happens when you open your mouth in spring training. And Dan supplied a couple of tweets from Francisco Alvarez earlier in camp talking about, quote, I think we're the best lineup in baseball. We can fight with any team. So the baseball gods, they're a funny thing. Right? When something bad happens to us as fans, we always look up and say, why do the baseball gods hate us? Why do the baseball gods always help the teams that we hate? Francisco Alvarez did not get hurt because he made a comment about the Met lineup being as good or better than the LA Dodgers. But what I will give you, Dan, and I said this early on after Francisco made those comments, why, when you are not the key to a lineup, and he's not, he's a guy who needs to prove himself, I don't know if I want to hear that be the guy who's talking big. You know what I mean? That was my issue. Not that he's taunting the baseball gods and he's going to get hurt. Like, I'm not bemoaning his comments because it led to this fractured hamate bone. But my thought at the time was, if someone's going to talk big about this lineup and big about this team, let it be Vientos. By the way, I don't even mind him doing it. He's only done it for 1 year. It's not even a full season, but I can see him doing it. Francisco Lindor, obviously. Juan Soto, clearly, as the new guy here. Like, yeah, man, we're better than anybody. When Alvarez does it, it's like, bro, you got a lot to prove. So I don't agree with you, Dan, that it, you know, somehow toyed with the baseball gods, but he's got to prove himself. And a part of proving yourself at the major league level is being available. Now, one of the beautiful things about the core of this Met team, even though it's been criticized over the years, is that they play. Francisco Lindor plays even when he's struggling. Pete Alonso plays even when he's struggling. Brandon Nimmo plays. He certainly played in the second half last year when he was struggling. There is a great value to going out there and playing every freaking day. Francisco Alvarez now, for the second consecutive year, has had an injury that's going to cause him to not play every day. And I get it. It's fluky. Blah, blah, blah. The facts are still the facts. He's got to go out there and prove he can play. So fingers crossed on his recovery. Hopefully he's back. Like, if he's back in early to mid-May, I would consider that a success. Oh, one other injury update I do want to give you. Sean Manaea hasn't been feeling any of the symptoms of the oblique issue. So I know he's going to get imaging on Monday or Tuesday. And if that checks out, considering Sean's feeling good, he can begin a throwing program, and that can get him back on track to be in this rotation by the middle of April. So that would certainly be a plus. Now, one other guy we spoke to here in spring training is Pete Alonso. You will hear from Pete Alonso on the next edition of Rico Bronya. You will also hear a little bit of Pete Alonso on the next edition of Evan and Tiki, because Pete Alonso, and I love you, Pete, but he challenged me. I'll leave it at that. All right. You'll get to hear the details of that on Evan and Tiki, and you'll get to hear the full interview on our next edition of Rico Bronya. I guess that would be episode 443 when we're back at home. We're back in the Rico studios. But it's been awesome being out here. PGA National, I opened up the podcast saying this, and it's so true. This is as beautiful a resort as you'll ever see. If you love golf, which I know a lot of people do, certainly a lot of people we work with at the station, this place is a dream. I don't even play golf, and the place is a dream. The pools, the bars, the restaurants, just an absolutely gorgeous place. So if you're in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, on a vacation, I certainly recommend you PGA National Resort. Beautiful place, and I appreciate them giving us this wonderful table where we could host a Rico Bronya. And if you watched on YouTube, you got to see the beautiful palm trees. I don't know if that bothered the people watching, where they're like, damn it,
It's cold where I am. I'm jealous. Or you're able to look at it, as I hear some weird loud noises, and say, oh, that's beautiful, man. I wish I was there. But the next time you're in Florida, I can't recommend it enough. PGA National Resort, awesome job. I thank them. I also thank Das Beer Garden. They did a great job with our live Rico on Saturday. And, of course, the great Pete Hoffman. Pete Hoffman has slept a grand total of 27 minutes on this entire trip. He's doing overnights on Friday. He's flying to Florida. He's getting through all the technical glitches we got to fight through. And then, oh, by the way, he's flying back Monday morning, and he'll be there to produce BT and Sal. So one of the hardest working men in the biz, Pete Hoffman, take your bows, even though the camera isn't on you. He's bowing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No, thank you. And again, you want to fill out that survey and you have a few minutes. Great, because you can get half off the brand new Rico T-shirts. That runs, that half off runs until March 30th or March 31st. So you've got a couple of weeks to take advantage of that. Thank you very much for downloading, for listening to Rico Bronya and our very first spring training trip. Thank you very much for listening to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
StreetEasy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Think warm, think palm trees, think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.